the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, every year, hundreds of thousands of Americans die of various diseases, everything from heart disease to cancer to diabetes. What's behind it, and why are individuals dying in Western countries where they're not dying as soon elsewhere? It could be the very foods we eat. Joining me on the program is Dr. Michael Greger. He is co-author of a book, How Not to Die, Discover the Foods Scientifically Proven to Prevent and Reverse Disease. Doctor, I wonder if we could start out with the story of your grandmother who was diagnosed with end-stage heart disease, and basically the doctor sent her home to die. I wonder if you might share that with our audience.
Yeah, you know, I was just a kid when the doctors sent my grandma home in a wheelchair to die. She had, you know, end-stage heart disease, already had so many bypass operations, basically run out of plumbing at some point, confined in a wheelchair, crushing chest pain. Her life was over at age 65. But then she heard about this guy, Nathan Pritikin, one of our early lifestyle medicine pioneers. And what happened next is actually detailed in Pritikin's biography. It talks about Frances Greger, my grandmother. They wheeled her in, and she walked out. Within a few weeks, she was walking 10 miles a day, and thanks to a healthy diet, went on to live another 31 years till age 96 to continue to enjoy her six grandkids, including me. So given a medical death sentence at age 65, but able to enjoy that many more decades. That's why I went into medicine. That's why I wrote the book, How Not to Die. And that's why 100% of the proceeds I received from my book are all donated to charity. I just want to do for everyone's family what Pritikin did for my family.
Wow. It's your belief that most deaths in the U.S. are preventable and related to what we eat. I wonder if you might explain that.
Yeah, well, I mean, so that's from the Global Burden of Disease Studies. That's the largest study of disease risk factors in human history, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, found that the number one cause of death in the United States is the American diet. Number one cause of disability in the United States, our diet. And cigarettes now only kill 500,000 Americans every year, whereas our diet kills hundreds of thousands more. So the most important thing that affects our health and longevity is what we put in our mouth, food and cigarettes.
Now, you talk about in your book, there's four simple lifestyle changes which have an impact on prevention of chronic disease. One, as you just mentioned, not smoking. Number two, don't become obese. Number three, a half an hour of exercise a day. And four, eating healthy. Can it really be that simple, doctor?
And so those four simple behaviors, compared to people that don't do any of those, have associated like 80% less chronic disease. I mean, that's extraordinary. I mean, 80%. I mean, these are our leading killer diseases, and those four simple steps, and by, you know, better diet, they were just talking about eating more fruits and vegetables and whole grains, more healthier foods. I mean, that just shows how poor our diet is. The fact that such simple lifestyle changes can have such remarkable benefits really speaks to how far behind we've got in terms of taking better care of ourselves. People just don't know about the power they have. And that's really the good news, that we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet and other healthy lifestyle behaviors.
Now, in your studies, one diet found best to prevent and treat chronic disease is this diet you talk about, a plant-based whole food diet. And in this diet, you avoid meat, dairy, eggs, and processed foods. Now, most Americans would probably understand processed foods, but when you think about meat, dairy, and eggs, those are kind of like staples of the American diet.
Yeah, unfortunately so. And so the average American is dropping dead from, you know, leading killer chronic diseases. So heart disease, for example, the number one killer of men and women. There's only one diet that's ever been proven to reverse heart disease in the majority of patients, this plant-based diet. Like, if that's all a plant-based diet could do, reverse the number one killer of men and women, shouldn't that kind of be the default diet until proven otherwise?
You talk about something that I find fascinating, and that is your medical profession. Most doctors, when they go to medical school, are not trained in nutrition and prevention, but they're trained in the treatment of disease with either pills or some kind of procedure. And yet, as you talk about in your book, was it Hippocrates that talked about let food be thy medicine and medicine thy food? Why is that not taught in medical school?
Yeah, doctors have a severe nutrition deficiency in education. Most doctors are just never taught the impact healthy nutrition can have on the course of illness. And so, you know, they graduate without this powerful tool in their medical toolbox. Now, there's also institutional barriers such as time constraints, lack of reimbursement. I mean, in general, doctors simply aren't paid for counseling people on how to take better care of themselves. Of course, drug companies also play a role in influencing medical education and practice. You can ask your doctor when the last time they were taken out to dinner by Big Broccoli. It's probably been a while.
In part one of your book, you deal with specific diseases, everything from heart disease, cancers, blood pressure to diabetes. I want to focus on the big three, heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Let's begin with heart disease, the biggest killer. And in your book, in that chapter, you talk about heart disease in many ways starts in childhood.
Yeah, or even earlier, sadly, in the womb. And so studies on stillbirths found that you can find these little beginnings of these thickenings within the coronary arteries, the arteries that feed the heart muscle, in pregnant women with high cholesterol levels. But definitely by age 10, most American children have what are called fatty streaks building up side of their arteries. That's the first stage of the disease. These then turn into plaques in our 20s, get worse in our 30s, and then can start killing us off. It can cause a heart attack. Number one killer in our brain, and cause a stroke, which is number four killer, and to also cause other problems throughout the body, the same atherosclerosis, this hardening of the arteries. But as I said, the good news is that it need not happen. You know, we have control. There's a very rare genetic condition called familial hypercholesterolemia. People die in their 20s with, you know, sky-high cholesterols. But for the vast majority of people, it's a lifestyle disease. We have control. We can drop our cholesterol down by decreasing our intake of saturated fat, cholesterol, and trans fats. And if doing all those healthy things still doesn't get your cholesterol down, then you can add it to your diet, particularly healthy foods like soluble fiber-containing foods, slimy foods like oatmeal, okra, eggplant that has the soluble fiber that helps pull cholesterol from your body. And so those combined strategies should get your cholesterol down to a level in which you just won't build up this kind of plaque in your arteries, and you can scratch that off on the list of the tough killers in your case.
Yeah, I would attest to that. I used to have a cholesterol count of 250, and just simply from diet, it's down to 150.
Ah, fantastic.
Yeah, strictly diet. I just didn't want to take drugs, and I had a good doctor, and he was into nutrition. I want to talk about this number of cholesterol, 150. What is it about that level? Is that the level where basically the arteries and everything are clean, and anything above that, you're building plaque? What is it about that number?
So 150, really what we care about is the LDL cholesterol, the so-called bad cholesterol. We want to get that down 50, 60, 70, that low. And that translates to about a total of 150. The reason I don't talk about, you know, let's get your LDL 70, people often don't know their LDL number, but they may, hopefully, know their total cholesterol number. So that approximates about a total cholesterol 150. And at a cholesterol 150, that's the average cholesterol you see in populations that do not have epidemic heart disease. That's what we're born with. That's what our fellow great apes have. And that's what people eating diets that reverse heart disease have. And so that's a low enough level to prevent that cholesterol buildup within your arteries and also to stabilize whatever atherosclerotic plaques you already have in your arteries by facilitating your body starting to pull cholesterol away instead of continually adding to it, which causes this inflammation, which can eventually lead to this plaque rupture, causing a heart attack and potentially even death.
You know, in your book, you talk about through this plant-based diet, not only can you prevent heart disease and you can reverse it. And the one case that comes to mind that I think many of our listeners would be familiar is former President Bill Clinton, who had bypass surgery. Then he collapsed and had a stent put in. And I think it was Dr. Dean Ornish or another doctor got to him. And you take a look at him now, he looks like a different person. So let's talk about how you can reverse the disease, because most Americans, if they have it, they're taking pills. They're not thinking about reversing it, but just containing it.
I think people wildly overestimate the power of pills and procedures to keep them healthy. For example, you know, patients believe cholesterol-lowering statin drugs are about 20 times more effective than they actually are in preventing heart attacks. I mean, so no wonder most people continue to rely on drugs to save them. But, you know, our leading killers aren't caused by drug deficiencies. I mean, the dirty little secret in medicine is that most people surveyed said they would not be willing to take many of these drugs if they knew how little benefit these products actually offered. Whereas treating the actual cause by, you know, cleaning up our diets is not only safer and cheaper, but can be more effective in preventing, arresting, and reversing our leading causes of death.
You know, the surprising thing when you look at this diet program, if you go to the store, and somebody explained this once to me, you take a look at the cost of a potato, then you take a look at the cost of a potato chip, and then you look at the cost of a Pringle. A plant-based diet is actually cheaper than going down the store aisles buying processed foods or heavy proteins from chicken to beef and other animal-based proteins. That's what most people don't realize. It's not only healthier, but it's cheaper.
Yeah, it can save the average family thousands of dollars a year in grocery costs. Now, this is assuming people are eating healthy, you know, plant-based diets. There's all sorts of processed plant-based junk food on the market now. I mean, the processed food industry, you know, will give you paleo junk food, low-carb junk food, low-fat junk food. They'll give you any kind of junk food they want, just because there's not a lot of money to be made in produce, fruits and vegetables, because there's no markup, they're perishable, they go bad, you know, they're not branded products. So even a broccoli grower isn't going to put an ad on TV for broccoli because you'll buy their competitor's broccoli. I mean, it's just like the whole system is set up to promote the consumption of the worst foods, not because, you know, these food company CEOs are sitting there wanting to see, you know, our kids get fat, but that's where the money is made, right? You sell a can of soda, right? Dirt cheap ingredients, sell for a couple bucks a bottle. That's what makes your shareholders happy in the next quarter. You just not going to get that selling sweet potatoes. And so the system is just not set up to educate people about healthy eating.
I want to move on to cancers. You know, it's obvious if you smoke cigarettes, you stand the chance of getting lung cancer. And there's two cancers that affect both men and women. That is breast cancer and prostate cancer. Let's talk about certain kind of diets that can reverse it. In fact, in your book, you talk about there are several studies where prostate cancer was actually reduced or reversed simply through diet and the effects of greens like broccoli and kale, which are almost like superfoods.
Indeed. So this was Dr. Dean Ornish's work, who not only was very influential in former President Clinton's lifestyle, but he published the landmark lifestyle heart trial back in 1990. He was the first to prove in these randomized trials that indeed heart disease could be reversed. Once he conquered our number one killer, heart disease, he then moved on to killer number two, cancer. So what he did is he took men with early stage prostate cancer and put them on the same kind of diet that he used to reverse heart disease. And he did this because the realization that the same populations eating these diets centered around whole plant foods that didn't have epidemic heart disease also didn't have the same kind of levels of our leading killer cancers as well. They weren't dying of colon cancer and breast cancer and prostate cancer. In fact, 100-fold difference in rates in terms of some of these cancers. And so that suggests that 99% of our risk we actually have control over And so let's put people with prostate cancer on this kind of diet. And he was the first to show a reversal of progression. On average, of men with prostate cancer saw their PSA levels drop. It's a marker of the tumor volume, the tumor size. So on average, a shrinkage of their tumors never before shown. Now, this was a plant-based lifestyle program. It was not just diet. Also encouraged moderate exercise and stress management, some other things. But this was really kind of the landmark turning point in our understanding that it's not just heart disease, diabetes, and hypertension that can be reversed, but we should also turn our attention towards healthier eating and living when it comes to cancer as well.
I want to move on to Alzheimer's. I interviewed Dr. Gary Small from the University of California Longevity Center, and the thing that he brought up, and you bring up in your book, Alzheimer's is more to do with the lifestyle that you live than it is genetics. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so, you know, there's this gene called APOE4, the so-called Alzheimer's gene. And when you have this gene, you're between 4 and 8 times, depending if you have 1 or 2 copies, 4 and 8 times the risk of getting Alzheimer's disease. But ironically, the place in the world with the highest rates of this Alzheimer's gene also have some of the lowest rates of actual Alzheimer's disease. And this is in Nigeria, parts of Africa, where they're eating these plant-based diets. And then you have to take a step back and say, wait a second, what does APOE do? This is the primary cholesterol carrier in the brain. So when it's mutated, you can get this buildup of cholesterol within your arteries, within your brain, which reduces the supply of oxygen and can accelerate the development of Alzheimer's disease. But if your cholesterol levels are low enough because your intake of saturated fat and other unhealthy foods is low enough, then it doesn't matter what your genes. The diet trumps the genes, you know. So whatever kind of bad genetic deck we've been handed, we can reshuffle it with diet.
I want to talk about another serious disease, which is diabetes. And yet, when you look at diabetes or you go to the diabetes website, they say very little about plant-based diets. Why is that?
Oh, that's changing. And in fact, so the latest American Diabetes Association lifestyle recommendations does promote plant-based eating. And that's because there's just an overwhelming amount of evidence now. In fact, this new meta-analysis just came out that showed that people that are eating plant-based diets on average have half the diabetes rates, and those people that switch later in life can cut their risk by about 25%. But you don't know until you put it to the test, and that's the really exciting thing. Again, this disease reversal. Just like we didn't think heart disease was reversible, we thought it was just a chronic disease you have for the rest of your life. It gets worse, 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 then you die. The same thing we used to think about type 2 diabetes. Once you get it, all we can do is give you pills and insulin injections, try to slow down the rate at which you go blind and lose your kidney function and suffer, you know, lower limb amputations. But remarkably, put people on a healthy enough diet and you can't reverse diabetes, meaning normal blood sugars off all medications. And you can do this even without weight loss. I mean, any diet that causes you to lose weight can improve your diabetes. And so you can show this with like gastric bypass surgery, where you don't really change the diet at all. You just cut out some internal organs, and you can get an improvement or even reversal in diabetes. But if you change the quality of your diet, even if you're eating the same amount of food, you can eat more food. If you're changing the quality of your diet, eating a whole food plant-based diet, you can reverse diabetes. And so that should be the, as far as I'm concerned, should be, you know, the first line, you know, of defense against this disease. Any disease that can be successfully treated with diet and lifestyle, that should be the first approach, and pills and procedures should be only if the person is unwilling or unable to control their disease with lifestyle.
I want to move on to blood pressure, and I want to share a pop quiz from your book with my audience. And here's the question I would ask my audience. If you were to take a look at sodium, which we know plays a role in high blood pressure, which would have the more salt or sodium in it? A serving of beef, a serving of baked all-natural chicken, a large McDonald's French fries, or a serving of salted pretzels? Now, when I read that, the first thing that came to my mind was McDonald's French fries. But the answer, doctor, if you will share it with my audience, will surprise our listeners. Share it, please.
Yeah, it's the all-natural chicken of all things. See, wait a second. Why does chicken have such high sodium levels? It's because they inject the chicken. And they can still call it all-natural. They inject the chicken with salt, with phosphate additives. And what it does is by injecting salt, it causes the water weight to increase. The chicken meat itself takes on more water weight. And this is a profitable practice for the poultry manufacturers. But unfortunately, what that ends up is the chicken ends up being the number one source of sodium intake for most middle-aged Americans. Now, for adolescents, pizza, number one. But for ages 19 through 50, people in most of their adult years, the number one source of sodium is chicken, which I think really surprised people. And again, it's not the chicken itself, but it's what they do to the chicken. And it's something that they don't have to put on the label, unfortunately.
I want to talk, and related to blood pressure, you mentioned in the book the magic of flax seeds can bring blood pressure down 8 to 10 points. And before we went on the air, after reading your book, I started adding flaxseed to my oat bran in the morning with berries, and doctor, it works. My blood pressure dropped 8 to 10 points. What is it about flax seeds?
I love it. No, it's so wonderful. And there's lots of foods like this that have almost kind of medicinal, pharmacological benefits, but only have good side effects. And these, you can do these randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials. Now, typically, you can only do that with drugs, right? You give someone an active drug or a sugar pill, they don't know which is which, and then you can see what the actual effects are. And now you say, well, wait a second, how do you do that with food? Well, what they do is you can bake people different muffins, one with flax seeds, one without flax seeds. They both look the same, taste the same, and then you give half, randomize people to half to the flax muffins, half to the non-flax muffins, and you can see if does it matter if someone eats more flax or not, whether they know it or not, and you do those kind of studies, and you can see that a few spoonfuls of ground flax a day can bring down blood pressures 2 to 3 times better than some of our leading blood pressure medications, only have these good side effects, like reducing the risk of breast and prostate cancer, helping to control cholesterol, triglycerides, and blood sugars, reducing inflammation, curing constipation. I recommend people eat a tablespoon of ground flax seeds every day, whether or not they have high blood pressure.
You know, I want to move on to something that I wonder if you might expound upon, and that is alcohol. I remember about 10 years ago, my doctor said, hey, you know, it'd be a good idea to have a glass of red wine with dinner. And I know the book, The Blue Zones, that talks about individuals that live to be centenarians, well over 100, one of the characteristics in their diet was red wine. So, doctor, what is too much? What is just right? And what's the difference between, let's say, red or white wine?
Yeah, well, everyone agrees that heavy drinking during pregnancy and binge drinking are all bad ideas. What about moderate drinking? Well, there appears to be a beneficial effect on overall mortality by drinking some alcohol, but only, it seems, for people that don't take good care of themselves already. So there's this famous study where researchers recruited about 10,000 men and women, followed them for 17 years. No benefit from alcohol for those who didn't smoke, exercise 30 minutes a day, and even just a one serving of fruits and vegetables daily. So we're talking very kind of low bar for healthy living behaviors. And those people that fit those criteria did not get benefit from alcohol. Though, if for people that refuse to eat healthy, moderate alcohol may have some benefits. Bottom line, grapes, barley, potatoes, best eaten in their non-distilled form, and Johnny Walker's no substitute for actual walking.
And is there such a thing as non-alcoholic wine? You talk about it in your book. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, just like there is non-alcoholic beer on the market now, you can get non-alcoholic wine. So it's basically they just make wine and they remove the alcohol, just like you can make decaffeinated coffee where you just remove the caffeine. And so then you can get some of the benefits of the grape compounds, but without some of the downsides of the alcohol. So yeah, you can ask for it. Or even better, you can eat it in whole food form by eating some grapes.
In your book, you talk about getting back and you talk about foods, and you use the analogy of a stoplight. Green is unprocessed plant foods. Yellow is processed plant foods and unprocessed animal foods. And of course, red is ultra processed plant foods, process animal foods. I guess the one thing people like yourself and others are starting to have an impact, at least I've noticed it here in California, you walk into the grocery store and all of a sudden now the produce departments are getting larger and the aisles with all the processed stuff that most people shop and buy are getting less so. So let's talk about that and how easy it is to make this transition to a healthier diet.
Oh, I love that. I'd love to see more produce everywhere. That's really certainly the healthiest aisles in the grocery store. You know, it's not all or nothing. It's not black or white. You know, it doesn't matter what you eat on your birthdays, holidays, special occasions. It's the day-to-day stuff that really adds up. And on a day-to-day basis, we really should do our best in terms of centering our diets around these healthiest of healthy foods, these whole plant foods. And in fact, I have a free app called Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen. People can download for Android and iPhone. Basically, it's my recommendations around a daily dozen checklist of all the healthiest of healthy foods. I encourage people to fit into their daily routine. So, you know, it's like a little checklist you check off and you can track your progress. So I want people to eat beans every day and berries every day, the healthiest fruits, greens every day, the healthiest vegetables, that tablespoon of ground flax seeds, quarter teaspoon of turmeric, you know, the best beverages, best sweeteners, how much exercise to get. Basically, just kind of just inspire people to start getting some of these healthy behaviors into their daily routine.
Yeah, because in your daily dozen, I just want to read and share some of these with our audience. Beans, berries, fruits, cruciferous vegetables, greens, other vegetables, flax seeds, nuts, spices, grains, beverages. What kind of beverages do you consider to be healthy?
Three healthiest beverages are water, an herbal tea called hibiscus tea, and green tea, green or white tea. These are our healthiest choices in terms of hydration.
Well, listen, Doctor, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. The name of the book is How Not to Die by Michael Greger. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
You know, I want to share a couple things. If you've been listening to this program, we've had a number of authors on, from Dr. Dean Ornish to Caldwell Esselstyn from the Cleveland Heart Clinic, and also the authors of the China Study. And I want to share something with you, because like in our family, genetically, we were prone for heart disease. I lost my grandfather at the age of 63 after a heart attack, my grandmother the same, but my mother lived to be almost 87. And at one time, I had a cholesterol count of almost 250, and I didn't want to start taking drugs. And so, fortunately, I found a good doctor. If those of you who are in the market remember the very famous Dow theorist, Richard Russell, and I remember reading his newsletter, and Richard was, I think, around age 70. He already had bypass surgery, had his second heart attack, and basically his doctor told him to go home, just like Dr. McGregor's grandmother was told to go home and die. And Richard Russell found my doctor. He changed his diet, went through chelation to clean his arteries out, and instead of dying at age 70, Richard Russell lived to be over 90 years old. So there is a lot of truth about this. And as Dr. Greger talks about in his book, a lot of this stuff isn't popular. I mean, you think of what you spend on drugs, what you spend on procedures from bypass surgery, when a lot of the answer is just simply eating healthy. And that means going to the supermarket and spending a lot of time in the fruit and vegetable section versus processed foods. So it can be done. I've seen it myself personally, and I've had clients who have tried the same thing, and they're seeing the reversal of issues that they were dealing with. I highly recommend that if you have a chance, pick up the book. He talks about different diseases, everything from diabetes, blood pressure, lung, heart, breast, prostate cancer, Alzheimer's. And he talks about the diseases, and then he has a whole section of what he calls superfoods that really can help you. Now, he has a website. It's called Nutrition Facts, nutritionfacts.org. And I would invite you to go take a look at his website. It's all free. He does this for the good of mankind, and I admire him for doing it. But I think you'll find this enlightening, especially if you are suffering or you have these kind of ailments that run in the family. It might be worth your while. And on the other hand, it just might save your life. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.